Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Do you remember Blake Griffin? Does that ring a bell? Do you remember Lob City Blake Griffin? You know, the guy who used to average a 20-point double-double, a dude who would dunk over cars, do national endorsements, generally destroy anybody and anything that got in his way. You remember that guy, right? You remember that guy doing things like this to Kendrick Perkins.
It's a physical game.
A monster jam by Blake Griffin. Oh, what a play by Blake. The fans can hardly believe what they just saw.
Is it possible to top what he did last year?
Almost a Mozgov.
It's better than a Mozgov. I didn't think it was possible to top him. Look at that play.
That's Perkins.
Oh, my goodness.
That dude used to do things like that. And a big man like Griffin should not have been able to do things like that to Kendrick Perkins. And he certainly should not have been able to do things like this to the legend that is Timofey Mozgov.
Randy Foy brings the ball ahead. Around the Griffin screen, pick, roll,
slam dunk! Oh, me, oh my, what a play! He stopped about 3 feet short of the rim and just threw it down.
Ralph, it's like the elevator went to the third floor and paused, and he got fouled, and he said, I gotta go another level.
That is amazing.
He never touched the rim with his hand. Oh, my goodness.
All right, so that Blake Griffin, do you remember that? I know the Clipper bros do.
Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
All right, so why am I talking about that? I'm talking about that now because all of that feels like ancient history. Because now Griffin is in Detroit. And Detroit is looking to get Griffin out of Detroit. The team announced yesterday that the six-time All-Star will be out of the lineup until the organization and Griffin's team, personal team, are able to work out a plan for his playing future. He's not going to play until they figure it out. GM Troy Weaver told ESPN, and I quote, after extensive conversation with Blake's representatives, it has been determined that we will begin working to facilitate a resolution regarding his future with the team that maximizes the interest of both parties. We respect all the effort Blake has put forth in Detroit and his career and will work to achieve a positive outcome for all involved. End of quote. For his part, Griffin issued a statement which read, quote, I am grateful to the Pistons for understanding what I want to accomplish in my career and for working together on the best path forward. End of quote. So let me help you with these statements. I can translate them. The team is trying to trade him, and if that doesn't work out, they'll buy him out. And he will not be playing in Detroit until they have that completed. In other words, Blake Griffin is done in Detroit.
Now I'm done.
Now, on the surface, you might be thinking, why would a team that's in dead last in the division look to get rid of Blake Griffin? Why is a team in that spot that has struggled to find an identity for years looking to dump their most recognizable player? It's because Blake Griffin is barely recognizable. Running back those clips at the top of this, it seems like they aren't just from a different team and a different decade. It feels like it's a different lifetime altogether. Those dunks, that nastiness, ancient history. That dude is dead and gone and never coming back. Watching those dunks, you'd never be thinking that there would actually be a day and time when a team would be looking to trade that guy or buy that guy out. And that's the thing. We're not just talking about Detroit trading him. We're talking about the fact that they're going to have a hard time trading him. Time was, if Blake Griffin was on the trade block, there would be teams lined up around the block to get to this guy. Now it's practically impossible to move him. You don't think they haven't already tried? He's making a shade under $37 million this year. He's due another $39 million next year. That is a massive contract and one that's nearly impossible to move. And not just because of all that jack, but because now this guy is just another guy. Fact. Like, I understand why he'd want to go to a contender. I'm just not sure why a contender would want to bring him in, especially at that cost. Because he's not the same player, not even close. I'm not even talking about the fact that he's averaging 12 points per game and that he's shooting less than 37% from the field. I'm talking about the fact that he has two blocks. Not in the last game. Not in the last week. Not in the last month. The entire season. He has blocked two shots. He's blocked two shots this year. Now I know what you're thinking. We're talking about Blake Griffin. Not exactly Dikembe Mutombo. Right. But Grayson Allen has more blocked shots than Blake Griffin. Coby White has more blocked shots than Blake Griffin. Not exactly White's game either. Wouldn't you think that a guy of Blake's size and athleticism and lift would stumble into a block or two every now and then, even by accident? But he hasn't. And that's not even the scariest part. Because while Blake Griffin only has two blocks, he has more blocks than dunks this year. He has exactly zero dunks this year. In fact, this guy hasn't had a dunk in a game since December of 2019. Let me say that again. Blake Griffin has not dunked in an NBA game since December of 2019. He and I have the same number of NBA dunks since December 2019. The guy who used to jump over cars can't jump off the ground. Forget about playing above the rim. This guy doesn't even play above the floor. Quietly, while nobody was watching the Pistons, Blake Griffin turned into a dude in cement shoes. So, if you're a fan of another team and you're thinking, hey, sweet, we can get Blake Griffin. We can get him in a trade. We can get him in a buyout. That's fine. Just know what you're getting. Because you're not getting an all-NBA guy who jumped over cars. You're getting the guy who has not dunked in a game since the movie Cats was in theaters. Now, in fairness to Blake, this is not all his fault. Not all of it. It's not his fault that Father Time is jumping over the entire universe to dunk on his ass. It's not his fault that he can't stay healthy. And no, he didn't go Sean Kemp post-lockout and put on 40 or 80 pounds. He's just breaking down physically and looks like a shot fighter. And I'm sure it's got to suck to be in that spot right about now. It's got to suck to have been that guy and now be this guy. It has to suck to have the Pistons tell you you're not in their plans. And not only that, but you're in the way of their rebuild. Pistons are effectively telling Blake Griffin they would be better off without him. And they're right. And he's lucky they're trying to do right by him, or at least right by what's left of him. If you had ever said to me, even a few years back, that this is a guy that would be on the trade block or a possibility of a buyout, I would have never believed it. But here we are. Here the bleep we are.
Here the f*** we are.
Steve Peichel is my guest. Steve, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Jim, appreciate you having me on. Thanks always, so much.
Always good to have you on. Thanks for doing it again, Steve. So last time you were on, we talked about the concept of making sure that you don't mess with happy. So you've won five of your last six. What is the vibe like around the team right now?
Hey, they're happy. They're happy, which is a good thing. And it's good to be happy in February with the obstacles that we have and, you know, in front of us. And the league is just been unbelievably competitive this year. Every team seems to be able to beat anyone on any given night, but we're playing well, and in spite we had a great home court advantage with the fans packing the place, we don't have that anymore, but getting through the pandemic, keeping the guys healthy, and they're smiling.
That's a good thing. Rutgers head coach Steve Peichel was my guest. Now, you did beat Northwestern 64-50 on Saturday night. That's a game where Ron Harper Jr. went off for 14-11. He had maybe not been shooting the ball as well as he would have liked lately. So how pleased were you with his performance against the Wildcats?
You know, just real pleased with Ron. You know, he hasn't been shooting the ball as well as he had earlier in the season, but, you know, credit the other teams, too, for the job that they're doing. But when he rebounds like that, he's a really talented player, and he's a great kid, you know, from a great family. You know, his dad was one of the best players ever to play in the NBA, and his mom was a great player too in college. So he's got the great DNA, and he's figuring out, even when the ball's not going in, how to do some really good things for us.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, do not make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Wild Trapper, because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender and made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business, which takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, rough beef in a bag. Nobody. It's like eating an old shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors: old-fashioned, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? When you and I spoke last year, we talked about Ron and the fact that he keeps getting better and better as a player, and it's clear how much you love him, and you talked about how much you really appreciate that you have players who allow you to develop them, and that concept stuck with me. When you're recruiting, how do you identify guys that you know will allow them or allow you to develop them? What do you look for to know that somebody has that within them?
You know what? I do a lot of work, you know, on the phone too, finding out details of players. And, you know, I have to find guys like that. I don't get the finished products a lot of times, especially the places that I've had to coach at. You always have to find that guy that maybe down the road with some more weight and with a better shot, or with a better ability to handle the ball, that he can be a really, really good basketball player. And luckily, those characteristics with most of my players are so true. They're in the gym. They work hard. So their best days are ahead of them. And if you can identify those guys early and they have those kind of characteristics and they have a little chip on their shoulder, like, those are the kind of guys that I try to hone in on. And I think at the end of the day, they become better players than some of those guys that maybe are a little bit more ready out of high school to be players.
Steve Pike was joining us. You know, so last year you get into the top 25. And it's the first time in 41 years. This year you've been back in the top 25 again. Obviously, breaking that streak was significant last year. But how much more significant is it that you followed up last year's strong performance with another strong performance this year?
You know, just really important, you know, for our program and for our guys too. You know, we ended last year, you know, during the difficulty of this pandemic, and we were playing really good basketball, and we started off this season too. We continued to be ranked, and then, you know, we had a losing streak there, and we got out of the top 25, but then we figured out a way to get back into it. So I think, you know, I was really proud of our guys with all the obstacles to fight through, you know, that they were able to get back into that top 25 in this kind of league. And, you know, it's been great. I mean, Rutgers is a really good university, and people are really excited about us. This is a great recruiting area, and people are excited about Rutgers basketball, and that's a tip of the hat to my staff, that I have a great staff here that does a great job.
Yes, Steve, there's that. Absolutely, a tip of the hat to the staff, but the players themselves as well, in the sense that when you have a year that you had last year and the team is playing at such a high level, obviously they badly want to get into the tournament, and then they get that thing ripped from them like everybody else. But, you know, they're young athletes. That's a tough thing to process. It seems like they were able to process it and bounce back really quickly. How were they able to do that?
You know, I mean, it was so challenging too, because, you know, all the things that you were up against, and you have the social injustice too, just the issues with Kobe Bryant. I mean, they're all Kobe Bryant fans, and the tournament being canceled and the NCAA tournament being canceled, and, you know, the different things that they've had to go through in a short period of time. And for them to stay focused, we've been COVID-free too. We're one of the rare programs that haven't had any pauses. They've been focused, and they're hungry, you know, to hopefully play in some postseason. We haven't done that in a while here, and we would have done it last year. But they've stayed focused on what they want to do, and I'm thankful for that.
Steve Pike was joining us. You mentioned Kobe Bryant. I'm curious how, even to this day, Steve, it's still so shocking, and it still is so painful for so many people. How did your team process his loss, and what did he mean to them generally?
I mean, it was a huge loss, you know, to everybody that's in the basketball world and everyone across the country. And, you know, our players, that was, you know, I grew up with Michael Jordan in that era, and they grew up with Kobe. And Ron knew him personally, too. You know, so there were a lot of connections that, you know, that's something that they still talk about. Ron has his number on his sneakers. You know, to this day. So that's been a really tough thing for all of our players, and they show videos of them, and they talk about them, you know, all the time, and they have tributes to them all the time too. So it's one of those things that's ongoing, and they're still healing from that.
No doubt. Steve Pikel, my guest. You know, you mentioned earlier, Steve, that you got to take kind of a flyer or a shot on certain guys, and you have to see not where they are, but what they might become or what they might develop into. Then you've got Geo Baker, for instance, one of the seniors on the team. The story goes that when he first arrived, he weighed 155 pounds, was not that highly touted. How far has he come as a player, and what does he mean to you in the program?
I tell you, yeah, that may be a generous weight, too, at the time. But
crazy.
He's 190. Yeah, he's 195 now. He came from New Hampshire, not a highly recruited state. You know, he's going to leave here as one of our all-time great players and has made more clutch shots than, you know, any player probably that has ever played here. But another great kid and a really good student, a Dean's List student. So another guy that, you know, when I saw him, early on, I saw the upside, and he came in here and got better and developed and has helped take this program to places it hasn't been.
All right, then, before you go, one of the themes that has come up, and I've talked to coaches in the Big Ten, they almost to a man will tell you, you cannot get too high after a win, you cannot get too low after a loss, because that next game comes so quickly, and it's always a really good team. In your case, the next game is number 3, Michigan. When you look at them, what jumps out to you the most?
Wow. I mean, first and foremost, Juwan's done an unbelievable job. They have terrific players everywhere, but he gets them to defend. They're an elite-level defensive team. They block shots. They're number one in our conference in block shots. They have three-point shooters, and they have big guys. I mean, they truly are. I've been in this league 5 years, and there's been some really good basketball teams throughout my 5 years. And, you know, Michigan team with Coach Beilein and the Purdue teams, this clearly is one of the teams they can win a national championship, and they have all the pieces. They have shooters, ball handlers, post-up guys, and they're well coached. So this league is tough every game, and we're on the road. We got to go there and play really good basketball.
Hey, Steve, one more thought about Juwan. For instance, I'm not going to say that I'm surprised per se, because we know how cerebral he is. We know his approach to the game. We know where he kind of cut his teeth on learning to coach. He had that great run with the Heat. But, I mean, for him to step in the way he has into that program, into that conference, and have the success that he's having right now, and to handle that team the way he is, especially during a pandemic, what's that say about him?
Oh, I mean, he's done an unbelievable job, and he, you know, followed a legend in Coach Beilein, who did a great job. And then he's taken it, and he's even taken it to a higher level. And, yeah, really, really good coach. And they run good offense. They're really connected defensively. You know, real tip of the hat to him. He's done that all in 2 years, too. That's not an easy task to get to know your roster and to put your system in. And he's doing it during a pandemic. So even makes another layer of it, you know, much more impressive in what he's done than you really realize.
I think you make such a good point. I mean, the fact that he followed as good of a coach as John Beilein, I mean, a great, great coach, and then maybe he's lifted that bar even higher, is amazing. Finally, then, they beat Wisconsin Sunday night, and that was their first game in 3 weeks. What's it been like coaching through a season like this when the schedule can change at a moment's notice and often does?
You know, it's been nerve-wracking, to be quite honest with you. I mean, we test every single day here, and I'm nervous every day, you know, until I get the all-clear sign from, you know, our medical people. You're just always concerned. And when you go on the road, it's the same thing. You don't know actually if you're going to play up until, you know, a couple hours before tip-off. So you're trying to prepare for the next game, but you're hopeful that, you know, no one contracts the, you know, the virus. It's an invisible virus. The more you travel to, the more nervous you are. So it's kind of nerve-wracking, but our guys have, you know, done a really good job. They're excited about playing, and I think that's what people really need to understand, is that the kids want to play, and they're doing all the necessary sacrifices in order to do that. But it is nerve-wracking.
No doubt. Rutgers coming off a great year last year, and they're right back in the hunt this year. They are 12-7. They've got a big challenge and opportunity coming up on Thursday night at number 3 Michigan. Their head coach is Steve Peichel. Steve, great to have you back. Always appreciate the conversation. Good luck on Thursday night.
Jim, appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure that football would tell you that there's always football, that football is a year-round business. And it is, I guess. But not the way we know it, and certainly not during a pandemic. There's no combine. I mean, everything's going to be different. So we're going to have to do without. But thankfully, we still have TB43. Now, Tom Brady, as you already know, is a lot of things. All right? 7-time champ. Undisputed GOAT. Drunk Lombardi thrower. Cringy social media user. And allegedly an unbelievable motivational speaker. Alleged. I say alleged because over the course of his 21-year career, on more than one occasion, it has been noted by teammates that he really can light a pregame fire in them. I say alleged because I wouldn't know. I've never been there. I've never been with the guy right before a game, so I'm not really sure. Now, having said that, is a guy who is constantly on the lookout for fuel. I do have a legitimate and genuine curiosity as to how peak performers get the most out of themselves and the people they're around. I'm not going to lie. I'm more than a little interested in what a guy like Tom Brady is saying in the pregame. To a room full of alphas who have undoubtedly heard it all before, all these guys are saying, man, this guy's amazing. You would not believe the way this guy inspires us, what this guy says, what this guy does, how this guy fires us up. Yeah, I might believe it. I need to know what it is, though. How do you get to guys who've heard everything a million times? Well, then some tidbits start to leak out. Tidbits about what he did say before the Super Bowl 55 kicked off. Bucks linebacker Devin White asked the team to release it publicly so we could all see the genius that is Brady at work before kick. Multiple teammates said it absolutely did play a role in them curb stomping the Chiefs. One player told the Tampa Bay Times it was, quote, the epic of epics, end quote. Like, what could this genius goat slash nerd have said to become the epic of epics? You know, as Gronk would say, wow.
Oh, wow.
So when you think about White, when you think about Gronk, when you think about one of his teammates calling it the epic of epics, it sounds like Braveheart, Hoosiers, 300, and Gladiator all rolled into one. And I'm with Devin White. Come on, Bucks. Release the tape to us, please. Let us common folk get a taste. So while we wait on that, Peter King was able to unearth some of the appetizers. Unfortunately, no audio, only text, but the text hits just as hard. And let me tell you something. If you're around a brick wall right about now, that sucker is about to get knocked to the ground. It's about to get bulldozed. Are you ready for this? According to King, Brady rallied the squad and told them, quote, are you ready for this? Quote, seize the opportunity. We win today. We're champs for life. I mean, oh my God. Do I even need to say it? Straight fire. Seize the opportunity. We win today and we're champs for life. Man, I agree with that one dude. The guy who said that it was the epic of epics. The epic cliche of epic cliches. What? We worked all year for this. Didn't want any of that. No one can ever take it from us. Was too busy for Super Bowl 55. Let's go Lake was more inspiring than seize the opportunity.
Let's go! Let's go Lake!
Let's go Lake is at least fresh and original. I mean, I can safely say that I've never heard that before. Ever. Or since. Seize the opportunity is about as motivational as the hang in there, cat picture. We win today and we're champs for life. It's like the verbal version of that skydiving teamwork poster. Now I'm really with Devin White. The Bucks really do need to release that tape. So Peter King's report of ultra lame one-liners aren't the only thing that we have from the epic of epics. Leonard Fournette did say that Brady talked about honor and that it hit him in a way that it never has before. I mean, that's cool, I guess. Fournette did look good. He has played well. Hopefully nobody from that 2015 Patriots team was in that locker room because it would have hit them like they had heard it all before. Because they had. Before the Super Bowl against the Seahawks, Brady said, quote, it's about honor. We win this game and you're honored. Your kids are honored. Your families are honored. Win on three. I'm starting to think it's less about what's being said and more about the dude who's saying it. Because even Jim Zorn thinks that these speeches are ultra lame.
Hip hip hooray! Hip hip hooray! Hip hip hooray!
I mean, if you told me that Brady hit those guys with a hip hip hooray, I'd believe that too. I mean, I guess, hey man, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Clearly these dudes are getting something out of it. Clearly Brady is too, somehow, some way. Like 7 Super Bowls in 10 trips. And not just that, dude's getting the SNL treatment. Because this past Saturday, Beck Bennett appeared on Weekend Update in a Bucks gamer, a backwards hat, and sunglasses, and he played the role of drunk Tom Brady stumbling off the boat from the parade. And after using the Lombardi as a bottle opener for his Heineken, he then went with this.
You seem to be having a good time. This is a new side of Tom Brady.
Duh, it's because I'm in Tampa now. I'm a Florida baby. I'm not stuck in a freezer cold in Boston with the Pilgrims and old man Belichick. You hear that, Bill? You're not my dad anymore.
You all right, Tom?
Another trophy. I just won the Super Bowl. Probably gonna win another one next year, too. My problem is, nobody likes me. I don't know why I did so wrong. All I did was go out and win Super Bowls. Keep thinking, maybe there's one more trophy and people are gonna like me. No. Nope. Don't talk about the wins. They just talk about how I kiss my sons.
Like, that sketch was either written by a clone or directed at the clones. Anyway, maybe tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow was our day. Maybe tomorrow is the day that Tommy finally fades from this 9-day heater that he's on. A 9-day news cycle that he's been riding. We'll see. Until then, just remember, seize the opportunity. We win today. We're champs for life. That even applies to all you clones. Win the day. You win today, clones. You're a champ for life. Any credit card can offer cash back, but only Discover matches all the cash back that you earned at the end of your first year. It's like getting one of those birthday cards that's shaped like cash, so you already know there's cash inside before you open it up. But in this case, it's stuffed with your first year cash back match, and you don't even have to send a thank you note. How awesome is that? DeForest Buckner is my guest. DeForest, great to have you back. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me again, Jim.
Good to have you again. So let me ask you, it's been a little over a month since the season ended. What has the offseason been like for you so far? In other words, do you try to unplug and get away from the game, or are you right back on the grind?
No, I'm kind of unplugged a little bit. You know what I mean? Needed to reset a little bit. It was a stressful season, you know, dealing with COVID and, you know, all the new protocols that, you know, you had to come across against, you know, throughout the season. And, moving cross country with my family early on, you know, it was definitely a toll, you know, mentally, physically, all of it. So definitely had to decompress a little bit.
Yeah, my man, let me reset that really quickly because I want to ask you about that reset. I mean, that you made the point, actually, that it was the longest year of your life in terms of you were dealt. You had to move from the Bay Area to Indianapolis. You had the pandemic. Your wife was pregnant. You had the birth of your first child and more. So when you talk about a reset, like, how do you reset all of that? What's a reset feel like and look like to you?
Just spending quality time with my wife and my son, you know, visiting family, just little things like that. You know, the past month now has been awesome just being a dad, you know, being able to see my son grow. I mean, his smile just lights me up every day. You know, he knows. He lets you spend quality time with me, you know, now that I'm here throughout the day, majority of the time. So it's been nice.
We're talking about Dominic George Buckner. We talked about him the last time you were on, and you were sharing with us that he is, in fact, your why. So how is he doing, and what's fatherhood like?
Yeah, he's doing well. Getting close to walking. You know, we're training every day to be walking by his first birthday. So that's what we're doing right now. Yeah, it's been great, you know, being a dad, just like I said, spending quality time. That's the biggest thing. And being able to, you know, give my wife some rest. You know, she was a trooper throughout the season, doing all the night shifts, getting up in the middle of the night. And, you know, now daddy's on duty.
I love the fact that you guys were already in training. Like, what's Dominic's max bench right now?
His max bench, I would say two full bottles. That's what I'd say.
Awesome. DeForest Buckner is joining us. It's good stuff. So when we spoke during the season, we talked about what it was like to come to a new team during the middle of a pandemic, and you didn't get that normal time to settle into a team. So how would you describe the culture of the Colts, and especially on that defense?
Yeah. Moving to a new team, now I see how hard it is for guys to make that adjustment, but it was definitely pretty easy for me. It was a smooth transition just because, like you said, the culture, in Indianapolis is amazing. All the guys were, very inviting. They welcomed me with open arms. They just, made me feel a part of the team immediately. And that's what I really appreciated about, my whole team, the coaching staff, everyone from top to bottom, even to the training staff, the equipment staff. Everybody made me feel part of the team immediately, and they just made my transition smooth, and it allowed me to do my job at a high level.
Talking to DeForest Buckner, and the fact is you've got a routine and you've got a regimen that you stick to. Chris Ballard, the GM, was talking about the fact, quote, every day at 6:15 a.m. in the morning, Buckner's in the building with his routine, and all of a sudden you'd look up and there'd be another player and another player, end quote. So I'm kind of curious, how would you describe that routine? Like, what are you doing when you show up at 6:15 in the morning, and then how do you go about developing that routine?
Yeah, throughout every season, like you were saying, I like to get in a routine. It makes everything easier for me personally. And, I was trying to find ways, because I like to get 4 workouts in throughout the week. And, I just had to, figure out, how, I guess the Colts, the team, they did their schedule. Every team has a different schedule. So I had to get adjusted to the schedule. And once I got adjusted, I could, figure out the times that I could get my four workouts in throughout the week. And, it was at 6:15 or 6:30. So I'd get there by 6:15. So, every day at 6:30, I'd start my workout. It was 2 full bodies and 2 mobility days. So that was what I was able to do. And, a couple guys started, coming in, throughout the season, was going through. It was just awesome to see guys, start coming in and getting those workouts and taking care of their bodies. So it was definitely good to see that.
DeForest Buckner, my guest. So when those young guys come in and they say to you, hey, man, I want to talk to you about your process and how to be a pro and what can you tell me, what kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah, I always tell them the biggest investment you can make is in yourself. You just need to find what works for you. Not everything's going to work for you. Certain things that I do is not going to help you personally. And I learned to figure that out, throughout the 5 years I've been playing. I've talked to many vets, trying to see what works for them. And, I've done it. I've done a bunch of different things, and, I found what worked for me and what didn't. And, I've stuck to the things that work for me, and, it's been helping me along the way. And that's what I tell them. I just try to find certain things that help you, along the way, and not everything's going to help you. So you just got to try to fit that into your routine and make it a consistent thing.
You had another really big year, but it's kind of a strange situation in the sense that you were recognized as a first team all pro, but you were not selected as a Pro Bowler this year. I don't know how that hit you. For instance, a lot of fans were pretty irritated when you weren't named to the Pro Bowl. Is that something you ignore, or is that something you could actually use as motivation and fuel?
Yeah, I definitely use it as motivation and fuel. It's fun. As a player, you get frustrated. When you're playing at a high level, and you expect to be rewarded for the things that you do on the field. And they're not. Certain things aren't given to you that you deserve. Definitely you get frustrated. And I definitely use it as fuel for sure. But at the same time, I also look at it, as a team aspect. It's more than the personal accolades. I'm trying to get to the Super Bowl again. I'm trying to win it this time. So that's definitely the main goal. But, all those little things, the accolades, I definitely use it as fuel.
We're talking to DeForest Buckner for a few more moments. Excuse me. No, I get that. As long as we're talking about work in the offseason, I want to go back to that one more time. Last summer, you were running the sandhills of Fort Funston. What are those workouts like? And then what do you take away from them physically and mentally?
Yeah. Those are the type of workouts you do, to find that extra gear in the fourth quarter. When everybody's tired and your body hurts, I mean, you've been going all game. That's that fourth quarter, you know, workout that you got to do to mentally overcome and make a play. And that's why I like doing workouts like that. You got my pads on, running up those hills. I mean, those are the plays I think of. You know, when I'm in the fourth, our team needs a play, and I got to go make it. That's the reason why I do those certain type of workouts.
Do you actually like doing the workout, or do you like what those workouts do for you?
I like what they do for me. Right. Personally, I mean, I'd much rather be on a beach sipping a margarita or something. But those are the things that, you know, you got to do. I mean, and that I need to do to get to where I want to be. And those are the sacrifices you got to make.
All right, so quickly, there's a ton of talent on that defense. And you made the point that Darius Leonard is, in fact, the best linebacker in the NFL. Lay that out for me. Why is he that, and what do you like most about his game?
Yeah, what I like most about Darius's game is, one, the energy that he brings. And two, I mean, the guy is flying sideline to sideline. You turn the tape on and, you see the maniac going at it. I mean, there was a reason why everybody calls him a maniac, because he plays like a maniac. I mean, wherever the ball is, Darius is. And, I mean, crunch time, I mean, when you need a play, that he's making a play. You can definitely depend on 5-3 making a play for you and, you know, making a game-changing play. And that's what I love the most about his game. And also, I mean, his leadership, on and off the field, what he represents. I mean, it's just, you know, he's an all-around. He's a pro. He's a true professional, and that's what I enjoy about him.
You know, so finally, to me, it seems like the ultimate compliment you could say about any player, really anybody in any walk of life, is that they're a pro. They're a professional. Mm-hmm. What's that mean to you? When you think about somebody being a professional, what's that mean to you deep down?
Yeah, honestly, someone who handles their business, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what profession you're in. I mean, you're just handling your business at the highest level. And, you do it at a consistent basis. And, you're doing it at 100%. That's what I really think what a true pro is, you know what I mean? And like I said before, I think that's what Darius is.
I'm talking about fan-controlled football. And it's exactly how it sounds. The fans get to control it to a certain extent. Anyway, it got a little bit of run when the league was announced for that reason. And then Saturday, that league made its debut. Normally, an indoor league that's played on a 50-yard field that looks so small that it looks like a living room is not something I'd care about at all. But when I hear that Marshawn Lynch is involved in that league, then you have my attention. When you tell me that Marshawn Lynch is involved in anything at all, you have my attention. And come to find out, he is the co-owner of the Beasts of the FCF. All right, now we're getting somewhere. What else can you tell me about this big dog? Wait, what? Dude might play in these games, and or he might broadcast these games. Okay, you put a camera in this guy's face, you put a mic in front of him, and the rest of the world is going to come to a grinding halt. You don't believe me? You think I'm overstating that fact? Really? Then check out his work.
I'm gonna go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad with these croutons and all this though, right? Go ahead, take me a nice fat get my stomach all right and everything. Then I'm finna go out here and try to run for 200 on a 50-yard field like was at.
All right. You have any idea how good that clip was? I've been in broadcasting more than 3 decades, and on my best day ever, I never uttered anything that awesome. Did you hear what that guy just said? Marshawn was teasing a possible return to the football field, and yet even that somehow got completely lost in the fact that he was breaking down his Caesar salad and what would happen after he had his Caesar salad. Alvin, can you run that back one more time?
I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad with these croutons and all this though, right? Go ahead, take me a nice fat get my stomach all right and everything. Then I'm finna go out here and try to run for 200 on a 50-yard field like was at.
This dude, quote, I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad with these croutons and all this bleep, though, right? Go ahead and take me a nice fat bleep.
Fat?
And get my stomach all right and everything. And try to run for 200 on a 50-yard field. Can I please hear that just one last time?
I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad with these croutons and all this though, right? Go ahead, take me a nice fat get my stomach all right and everything. Then I'm finna go out here and try to run for 200 on a 50-yard field like what's happening.
You find me any announcer, anywhere, at any time, in any sport, who has uttered anything better than that on air. I dare you. I challenge you. That is the best breakdown of a plan since Nate Diaz broke down his approach for facing Conor McGregor.
What is the game plan going in against him?
The game plan is you go in there, hit him with some good don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash.
Up until now, that was the best thing I ever heard from an athlete in terms of breaking down a game plan. Except instead of Nate Diaz hitting Conor with some good bleep and coming home with a pocket full of cash, Marshawn was going to take a good dump and then run for 200 yards on a 50-yard field. That clip of Marshawn is so good and so real and so raw. I didn't even care that he mentioned he was going to suit up and play and did suit up, but didn't actually play. Because honestly, I'm way more interested in having this guy in the booth than what he might do on the field. And that's saying a ton. We all remember beast mode, snot bubbling suckers on the field. But as dominant as he was down there, I think he might be even better up in the booth. Especially if he's letting us in a manner like that and sharing his process and the way he gets ready for the gig. Never mind unleashing the Kraken. This dude is unleashing the growler and taking us through it on air. I mean, pure electricity coming from that booth. I don't often get into comparing and breaking down great play-by-play guys and color analysts. Not where I live. But let me say this right now. If I'm a suit and I'm in a position to hire, I am hiring Marshawn Lynch for the next NFL season right now. Like, this year's breakout star was Aqib Talib. We had him on our podcast, man. He is so good. He is awesome. But I'm telling you, Marshawn might be a generational talent when it comes to this sort of thing. Like, I'm hiring this guy if I'm an NFL suit. I'm hiring this guy for the current NBA season. The current NBA season. The MLB season is coming up. And there's not a single sport that would not be improved by Marshawn Lynch breaking it down, commentating on it, and talking about what he does to get ready for the broadcast. Regular season baseball especially, right? I mean, that's a real problem, an attention problem. That problem would be solved by Marshawn Lynch talking about growlers, salads, croutons, and growlers. You want to take your shot at regaining that gloss of national pastime? Then go ahead and put the national treasure that is Marshawn Lynch in your broadcast booth. Yeah, you don't believe me? This guy just put something called the FCF on the map. I'm talking about it on my show today. And believe this, as long as he's involved with the FCF, that will not be the last time I talk about the FCF. One FCF take on this show is a miracle. So what? I don't even know what the word is. What word would describe me talking about FCF twice on this show or five times on this show? Getting me to talk about that 7-on-7 on a 50-yard field bullcrap more than once. It's a 7-on-7 50-yard bandbox. And I'm just giving it primetime real estate. Hey, listen, I don't need the beast dragging tacklers in that bandbox. I just need him to show up and talk about it. Or talk about anything he wants. It doesn't even have to be about football. It could be about salads. It could be about, in fact, it better be about salad. That's what I want. Bob Costas, for instance, is arguably the greatest to ever sit behind a microphone. I can't say how much I respect Bob Costas. Honestly, love Bob Costas. But he's not giving you that kind of access. He's not giving you that kind of in-game breakdown. And that's not a slight on Bob. Bob is the most cerebral, intellectual guy in our business ever. And ever will be. He's a legend. Marshawn, though, he's just built different.
I'm just about that action, boss.
You are, dude. That was real. Maybe a little bit too real for some people. But Marshawn doesn't care. He's just out there. He's just out here telling you how it is. And the audience is connecting with it on a deep, personal level.
I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad with these croutons and all this though, right? Go ahead, take me a nice fat get my stomach all right and everything. Then I'm finna go out here and try to run for 200 on a 50-yard field like was at.
I mean, the genius in that is you could not have scripted something like that. You could find the best writer in the world, and they could not have written anything that good for that guy. And he just sat down there, let it rip. I'm always fascinated also by, and I've mentioned this before, what people eat when they're on air or when they're about to be on air. I'm fascinated by this. And I see this a lot over the years when I've done TV shows, especially big TV productions with multiple talent. It's really fascinating to see who will eat before they go on and who won't, or what they eat or what they don't eat. I'm always absolutely fascinated by that. I'll give you an example. Like when I do the NFL Today on CBS, I always go room service. I don't eat when I get there. They lay out these beautiful spreads, like better than room service. Except I don't like to eat before the show. I'd rather fuel up early in the morning and have it carry me through the show. My man Marshawn is out here like eating on air or right before on air and eating roughage so he can get it all out, push it all through. And then that way he can run for 200 on a 50-yard field.
Like was that?
Normally, I'm not about this, as you know, because it just means Rex is going to call. And then five of you idiots will high-five him. But man, that is some really raw, very real, graphic commentary. And I never thought that I would say this. I need more. Marshawn, who's playing next week? What time? Who's going up against whom? Better yet, what time are you getting there? As I always say, Marshawn Lynch, if you need him. And I've never needed that guy more than I do right now. He's all about that action, boss. So after the announcement that J.J. Watt was leaving the Texans, you know, the obvious question was, where is this guy going to end up? Might it be Pittsburgh, where he could link up with his brothers? I'm like, the idea of three Watts in the same locker room is pretty absurd. Images of J.J. and T.J. murdering opposing quarterbacks in black and gold had Steeler fan peaking. One problem, Pittsburgh has got serious cap space problems. They're currently about $30 million over the cap. I'm no capologist, but that does not sound like that's going to add up to a third Watt. Green Bay, then, was floated as a possible destination. After all, he was born in Wisconsin. He grew up in Wisconsin, played his college ball at Wisconsin, was wearing a Badgers sweatshirt in his announcement video. You couple that with the fact that it feels like there is pressure on the Packers to improve that team and keep Aaron Rodgers and keep him happy. So that seems like that's a pretty damn good fit. Except the Packers are somewhere in the neighborhood of over $19 million over the cap. Then this report from Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com. Quote, J.J. Watt is seriously considering the Cleveland Browns. End quote. In fact, before I weigh in on that, let me hit you with the entire headline. Quote, J.J. Watt is seriously considering the Browns as one of his options because they have what he wants, sources say. End quote. And my sources say, hell freaking yes. Yeah. There is no sure sign that the Browns are back and are what I've been calling them now for a couple of years, America's team. This is all the evidence you need. The fact that J.J. Watt wants to join them on their Super Bowl quest. Can you imagine getting back into a time machine and going back even a few years and telling the world that in 2021, that not only would the Texans cut their best player ever, but that same guy would want to go to the Cleveland Browns? Was, quote, seriously considering the Browns because they have what he wants, end quote. Cleveland is a bleeping destination now. Now, Cleveland decides if they want you and not the other way around. They don't pitch you. You got to pitch them. Man, how times have changed. What an amazing time to be alive. Hell yes, the Browns have what J.J. Watt wants. They have what every great player wants. A shot at a ring. A shot at glory. A shot at immortality. Man, the Browns? The Browns have juice. The Browns have buzz. The Browns have an identity. The Browns have swagger. The Browns have confidence. the Browns have Super Bowl aspirations, a legitimate shot at that. And you know what they don't have? They don't have the Patriots' former team chaplain running the show. They don't have that. No, they've got Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski running the show. Yeah, but don't take my word for it. Check out more from that same report. Check out these details when it comes to the notion that Cleveland has what J.J. Watt wants. Quote, the two biggest things, money and a potential Super Bowl. What's more, they have a strong supporting cast and a positive environment. Check, 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 and check. End of quote. Right, to which I would add, checkmate. Unlike the Steelers and the Packers, the Browns are more than 21 mil under the cap, so they've got space. And they just went to the playoffs, and they came this close to beating Kansas City and booking a spot in the AFC Championship game. The Texans went 4-12 and puked all over themselves at every single turn. And you know what else this guy would love? J.J. Watt would love to go to Cleveland, because he could join up with Myles Garrett. Remember all those double teams that J.J. Watt had to deal with in Houston? I'm guessing they vanish when you've got Myles Garrett playing on the other side. I mean, imagine how scary that would be. Imagine what that pass rush would look like with these two dudes firing off the line on either side. If I see that, and I'm Ben Roethlisberger, I'm going to retire right now. I don't need to put my body on the line twice a year against that. I'm saying this right now. J.J. Watt would not be a good fit in Cleveland. J.J. Watt would be a great fit in Cleveland. J.J. Watt would be a perfect fit in Cleveland. J.J.!
J.J.!
J.J., listen to me. I know you're getting a lot of feedback. I know you're getting a lot of advice. I know there's a lot of different people in your ear. And I know you didn't ask me for my advice, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Go to Cleveland.
Cleveland?
Go to Cleveland. Sign on the line that is dotted. And then let's go out and win this whole damn thing together.
Oh my God, this is not happening.
It might. It might be happening. Oh my God, this might be happening. It should. If this guy wants money and a ring, then Cleveland is where he should go. If this guy wants a ring, Cleveland is where he should go. Yeah, I said it. And I mean it. And I've been saying it for 2 years.
What's so good about Cleveland?
What's so good about Cleveland? There aren't enough hours in the day. Joe? What's so good about Cleveland? Their team, their chemistry, their talent, their culture, their coaching staff, the city? Do it, JJ. JJ!
JJ!
Be a part of America's team. Joined by Michael McDowell. Michael, it is great to have you on the show. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Michael, it's great to have you on. And as I mentioned, the story itself, your journey is absolutely incredible. It's been a little over a day since you completed one of the most amazing wins at Daytona in history. So how is your life right now, and what have the last few days been like for you?
Oh, it's been wild, you know, just the emotions that you run through, you know, after winning the Daytona 500, just the, you know, the pure joy and excitement, and you're just over the moon. You know, for me, shortly after that, just a few hours after, just the thankfulness, man. I'm so appreciative of everybody that has, you know, helped me to get to this point and to get to this level. And it's been a hard journey. I mean, it's been 14 years of really grinding it out and doing everything I can to stay in the sport, you know, knowing that one day I might get a shot. And I got my shot, and it's crazy.
That's the journey. That's the grind. And I mean, the story really is the stuff of legend. But just so we're very clear and the listeners understand this, you went into Sunday's race still looking for your first career win. So what was your mindset and approach heading into Sunday?
Well, when we go to Daytona, you know, we always feel like we have a shot at it. And so we go into that race and we approach it, you know, as an opportunity. And so we've done a good job over the last few years of, you know, getting ourselves in position and running in the top 10 and trying to get to the top five. And so I knew what I needed to do. You know, I've become a student of super speedway racing. I studied the film and studied the guys that win these races. And so I had a game plan, and my game plan was to be in that top three coming to the white flag and to be a good pusher. And when they got side by side, try to make a run at it. And, you know, when we came off of turn two, Brad Keselowski and I were hooked up, and our Fords were super fast, and he made a move on his teammate Joey Logano, and they made contact, and Brad spun to the right, and Joey spun to the left, and the seas parted, and I drove right through the middle, and was able to win the race. It was, you know, unbelievable just how it all unfolded. And, you know, we had to be in that position and get ourselves in that position, and I felt like there was a chance. But when it actually comes through, it's amazing.
Michael McDowell is joining us. He won the Daytona 500. So you're right. Like, Keselowski makes that move. Logano tries to block him. They make contact. You go right through the middle. But at that point, there was still work to be done. You still had to beat Chase Elliott and Austin Dillon to the line. What were the last few seconds like then?
Well, you know, once I went through the middle there, you know, immediately, you know, I had to throw a big block on Chase Elliott. He had a run and, you know, was able to break up his momentum a little bit, and that helped me, you know, stay side by side with him until that caution came out. And like you said, I mean, Austin Dillon and Chase Elliott were right there, and it wasn't over until it was over. And so, you know, you're just laser focused. You're not thinking about all the extra. You're not thinking about if I win this race and what could happen, what it could mean. All you're thinking about is how do I win this race and what do I have to do it. And so, you know, you're fighting hard, you're blocking, you're moving left, right, you're avoiding the crashes, and, you know, then it's all over. And for me, it was sitting there waiting for NASCAR to determine who won the race.
Listen, when it was all over, it was all over. But again, we're talking about a journey, and I want to get into this again before you go, but this journey has been so intense and so extreme, and you just keep grinding and banging away. So, quote, when it's all over and you know that your first Cup Series win was the Daytona 500, what kind of emotions were you feeling? Has it even all fully sunk in yet?
No, you know, it hasn't sunk in yet. I mean, they keep you so busy, I don't think it will for quite some time, but you know, in that moment, you're just overwhelmed. You don't even know how to express it. You know, you're just overwhelmed with, you know, emotion and excitement and thankfulness and just, man, it's humbling. There's just so many things that are going on, and it's overwhelming. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's to process it all is very challenging, and it's amazing. And, you know, I'm just so thankful. I'm thankful to be one of 40 that gets to race in NASCAR every weekend. You know, I'm thankful for all the people that sacrificed so much for me to even be one of 40. And then to win a race and then win the biggest race and to be a Daytona 500 champion. It's just, you know, what an amazing journey and ride it's been.
Michael McDowell is joining us. All right, so in terms of that, you've said, quote, there have been lots of years where I was wondering, what the heck am I doing and why am I doing it? I always knew if I just kept grinding that one day everything will line up and go right, end of quote. So I'm curious, when the results were not going the way you would have liked, it would have been easy to give up. How were you able to stay in it and believe that if you did stay in it and keep grinding, that things ultimately would go right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the things that stick out to me is one is my faith is that, you know, not faith in myself and not faith in anything, but faith in God that, you know, he's allowed me to be here and that the ride's worth it. The journey's worth it. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, I've had my teeth kicked in and my face, you know, pushed in the mud and yeah, it's just crazy.
Talking to Michael McDowell. Yeah. I mean, my man, I can imagine that would be a pretty emotional thing when you consider what you've given up. And then, I don't want to make it worse, but, I mean, you've got all these people that supported you, and most of all, your family. You have 4 kids, and from the outside, it seems like part of what your career has been about, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like part of what this is about is you showing up every single weekend, doing the work, leading by example, being a role model for your kids when it comes to working as hard as you possibly can. So what's it mean to have your name on that massive trophy and be able to point to that as a result of what happens when you have that faith, when you have that belief, and you just keep working?
Yeah, I think you know, that's awesome. I mean, because I've never lost hope and I've never lost, you know, faith in that I was going to win races. I've always believed that. And I tell my kids that too. And you know, my kids have been around this sport and so, you know, they play with the other kids at the racetrack and the other daddies are winning races, right? And that's not hard for me at all. It's a life example that I give my kids. And, you know, I tell them that life's not easy and it's hard. And yeah, I would love to be in a race winning race car every weekend, but I'm not. And they are, and they're doing a good job, and they're winning because they worked hard to be there. And so for my kids to see me work hard at it and to see the reward of that, I think that, you know, it'll leave an impression in them for a lifetime too.
Hmm. And finally, what about the respect and admiration you get from your peers? As an example, Joey Logano said, quote, "I'm really happy for McDowell. If we couldn't win it, I'm really happy to see McDowell win this thing," end of quote. So that's really high praise. What's it mean to hear that from a fellow driver, and especially a guy like Joey?
Yeah, it means a lot. I mean, this sport, you know, is different than stick and ball sports where, you know, you might play a team once or twice a year and see, you know, each competitor once or twice a year. And we go to the same, you know, we're in the same circle all the time. And we go to the racetrack, we're all together. You know, we all live in the same area. Our kids go to school. I mean, we are in a very small bubble in NASCAR. And you're competing against the same 40 drivers and the same, you know, 15 teams every single weekend. And so there is a community element to our sport that's probably different than a lot of other sports. And so that, you know, to have that respect and to have those relationships, and it means a lot. And I mean, it means a lot to know that, you know, kind of while you're there grinding it out, you feel out of place, you know, and to have their respect and know that, you know, that people are happy for you and legitimately happy for you, it means a lot.
So finally, I wonder about this. Like, you're in it for the right reasons. And obviously, it's very clear that you have great gratitude and great humility. And probably you feel like you're the same person that you were prior to this thing going down. But what's it like to now know that you're going to be forever introduced as a Daytona 500 winner and that will be with you for the rest of your life and you will always be introduced like that?
It's unthinkable. I mean, for me, you know, to be on the same trophy and have my name around or near, you know, Richard Petty and Mario Andretti and Dale Earnhardt and Jimmy Johnson and, you know, man, there's so many more. Yeah, that's incredible. And you know, to all that Daytona does, the racetrack with the history and, you know, the ceremony and the process and, you are legitimately forever etched into history by just the way that they celebrate it. You know, whether it's your name in the concrete, whether it's, you know, on the Harley J Trophy. You know, there's just so much history around our sport and around Daytona. To be a part of that is very humbling.
Good night now.